This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on sportsradio740.com.
And welcome in to the Biscuits Radio Show. I feel special just for sitting here and talking because I haven't done a show in like 3 days. I'm seriously.
Well, welcome back.
Yeah, I know. It's been kind of weird for me to be on a microphone. As I am Joe Honk, the voice you just heard is Chris Adams Wall. Scott Tribble is here as well for our Biscuits Radio Show this Saturday. The lineup for today is going to be a little bit unique. And the reason why I'm going to tell you this is because we have been advertising wall-to-wall basketball coverage. Wall-to-wall basketball coverage. It's going to begin right after the Biscuits Radio Show on Saturday. They didn't tell me that they were going to broadcast the Alabama game to start off the tournament on Saturday. That's going to be over on our sister station, 95.1 The Fox. So once you get finished listening to us right here on Sports Radio 740, you can swap over there and you can listen to Alabama take on Villanova and their matchup of the day. And then we're going to have our first basketball game later on in the afternoon. But for the Biscuits Radio Show today, we are going to be talking to the legendary.
Fair.
I mean, legendary is good enough for us. This is going to be my first time even meeting or even talking to him. I'm talking about Joe Davis.
Another Joe.
We're adding another Joe on here. The voice, I can say voice of the LA Dodgers, which is so weird to say that that is who we're going to be talking to today. And it's so unique to be able to talk to a guy that literally was calling the World Series a little while ago. But that's coming up later on in the show. And as you can always follow us on Twitter, at Biscuits Baseball, at Joe Honk, at Biscuits GM, that's Scott Tribble, as well as at Chris Adams Wall. And I'm sitting in my office the other day, Scott.
Playing video games.
That was on I was playing video games. Just pick the day. That's exactly what I was doing. Basketball was airing. But I got a tweet sent to me about the rule changes for the minor leagues, and I will go ahead and say, reaction hadn't been too positive.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with the Twitter ratio, it wasn't a good ratio, which means like the number of replies that the tweet got compared to the likes and retweets was overwhelming.
Yeah.
So, initial response was very not good.
No.
But again, you know, there's plenty of proponents. There's baseball development guys out there who have come out and voiced support of it. There's players. Some players have actually voiced support. A lot of them have voiced not support for it, including some Rays that posted some tweets and then immediately had those tweets taken down.
But they posted, they hit the send, then they got text message. Yep. All right, fine. I'll take it down. All right, fine.
But no, it's what we're referring to is minor league baseball has come out with a new trio of rules that they're calling the 2018 pace of play rules. So the first one that was announced was basically they're limiting the amount of mound visits. They've been talking about this in Major League Baseball. Yeah. And Double A at our level, it's going to be limited to 8.
Yeah.
So again, the one caveat with this, which I think is going to really not make this that big of a deal, is if a pitcher and catcher have crossed up signs, the catcher just has to turn around to the ump and say, "Can I go talk to him?" And the ump will say, "Sure." And that won't count as a visit.
Gotcha.
So it is a developmental league. And again, I think this is when Roy stems from the World Series and just the relievers. Cubs bullpen pitchers escape me right now, but having to check with his catcher before every single pitch, trying to make sure.
Well, go back to Yankees Red Sox games.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's literally that is the definition of pace of play needs to be fixed when you're talking about an April baseball series between the two and it's going 4.5 hours because they're making bullpen changes so much.
And again, at the minor league level, especially at Riverwalk Stadium, our average game for a non-extra innings game last year was 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So we're not having those type of games at Riverwalk, but I get it. Major league, you're going to have to deal with that rule, so we're going to put an 8 limit at Double A, so that way by the time you're in the majors, you're used to having those mound visits. The pitchers are getting trained to take more control.
Yeah.
The second rule is in concern to the pitch clock, and I know you're saying, what's a pitch clock? Well, if you've been to Riverwalk for the past 2 years, there's a little digital clock that counts down in the outfield. And every single time I've ever talked to a fan, they always point to it and go, what's that? But essentially, it limits the amount of time that a pitcher has between throwing a pitch, so that way he's not standing there, he's not twirling the ball, a batter can't step out and do his gloves.
Go like no more.
Yeah, exactly. So it's limited, and it's been 20 seconds. They're changing it to 15 seconds this year for any time that there is not a runner on base. If there's a runner on base, it'll stay at 20 seconds. But again, we're talking a couple of seconds here and there throughout the course of a game. If you ask any pitcher or any catcher They don't know that clock's there. They're not adjusting their game because of it. It's just something that the umpires can do to punish someone who takes an absorbent amount of time.
And I watch a lot of college baseball and obviously been to a lot of minor league games here with you guys. I've never actually seen anybody violate the rule.
Well, sometimes
they do,
and the umpires will turn a blind eye.
Okay.
And that, we had a guy named Jay Chapman, who was a closer for the Biscuits, who took at least 2 minutes to throw every pitch. So that was always fun. Jake Faria was not great about that either. But I think it's good. Just, you know, pitchers will have that in the back of their heads. And
yeah.
The point is to move the game along. I don't think the mound visit thing is going to make much of a difference at all. I think people are going to lose count after, you know, four or five.
Yeah.
But I do like the pitch count. It's the last part that I'm not thrilled about.
Yeah, because I've went to SEC championship games, and when this stuff started being implemented, Bendy, you got never actually seen it enforced because it is the last one. And you mentioned the two that honestly I totally even forgot about. When you mentioned them, I went.
That's why we lead with it.
Right. I don't even care. But then you get to the other one, and we saw the other one in the WBC.
Yeah.
It didn't go over well there either. I mean, it counted but didn't count.
Right.
But
The third rule is that starting in extra innings, there will automatically be a runner starting on second base with no outs.
Ugh. Yes. An unearned run, apparently.
An unearned run, which that of all of the arguments that I've seen, that was one of the ones that kind of actually made me raise my eyebrow and go, oh, that's a very valid point. And
yes.
How do you score that?
Mm-hmm.
How do you put a runner on second base in your scorebook without it being an error charge to a fielder and without it being a hit or a walk or a stolen base or anything? So they actually had some interviews with some official like statisticians trying to figure out, okay, what's it going to look like in a scorebook? Because it never actually happened in the WBC.
Right.
And so it's more of just, we'll wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say, wait a second. I don't think we have thought that part out, because that was always going to be our first question. Well, how did the runner get there? Is he going to be – can you pick the runner? Because, again, if you're looking back at like, the 2017 season, use the Marlins, for example, can I pick D. Gordon to just go ahead and start at second base, please?
Well,
and just, you know, can I pick Billy Hamilton?
That's actually defined. The rule states that the runner gets put on second as an error that is not charged to a fielder. So that's how the runner gets on base. Again, how you score that, we don't know yet. But the runner will actually be the last batter of the previous inning.
Right.
So if you're the number four hitter and you pop out to end the bottom of the ninth and the bottom of the tenth, you're starting at second base, and the number five hitter is going to come up and try to bring you in.
So, again, in the old days, you know, you're talking about David Ortiz, no matter if unless he's getting substituted out for and somebody's bringing another DH in, he pops out in the bottom of the ninth. He's having to start at second base. You're not able to choose whoever you want, because that was going to be my major question is, if you can manipulate this.
That's exactly – I mean, that's the first thing that I brought up to Chris was, okay, you're Mike Guerrero of Biloxi. You have the fastest guy in the league at Johnny Davis up with two outs in the bottom of the ninth in a tie ball game.
Nobody on base.
I'm giving him the hold sign. You're not swinging that bat. If you walk, great. You now have a runner on in the bottom of the ninth. But if you strike out looking in three pitches, I now have the fastest guy in the league at second base with no outs in the bottom of the tenth.
Yeah.
And that's just – I think there's going to be some strategy to it. But realistically, I think the internet is kind of right in – wow, did I just say
did
that?
Did you actually said that?
But
it's like saying Wikipedia is always accurate.
The majority of the negative comments that come back say all this is going to do is lead – to bunt, intentional walk.
Every
extra innings is going to be bunt, intentional walk. Bunt, intentional walk.
Because if your three-hole hitter gets put at second base, I'm walking the four-hole hitter just so that I have a force at every place except for home.
Yeah.
That's my first thought.
There's going to be some trial and error for the first probably month of the season just to figure out – well, not month of the season. Not like this is going to happen every night. The Biscuits played 15 extra inning games last year out of 139. So it's not like this is happening every night.
And a couple of them happened during a doubleheader seven-inning ball game that may turn them into two 18 innings. Ball games.
That's right. Yeah. We'll look forward to those.
Yeah.
So again, like as a baseball fan, do I want to see this in the major leagues? No. As a minor league GM who, you know, we moved our game times up a half an hour because we were having people saying, yeah, we don't want to stay here until 10 or 10:15 at night to watch the end of a game. We want to watch the end of a game. I kind of get it. I've changed my opinion a little bit since they first announced. When they first announced, like my diehard baseball guy just came out. I was like, oh, this is not a good rule.
Yeah.
But the more like you sit and think about it, like how many extra inning games do we have last year where after the ninth inning's over, the fans get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not.
I'm not staying for this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we had a four and a half hour game in Tennessee last year that went 16 innings. I mean, how many people were at the Kodak Park at the end of 16 innings?
I think it was just me and Mick Gillespie, the broadcasters. Yeah. We won that game, by the way, 1-0.
So yeah, nobody else knows except for those that were on the
minor league baseball. Yeah. Is all about the fans, yeah, and you know, we want people to enjoy the baseball and come out and love the baseball players and be invested in it. But it's about the fans, and if this helps make the fan experience a little bit better, great. I know there's going to be people out there who disagree with it. The first time it happens, I'm probably still going to shrug my head and shake my head.
God, this looks stupid.
You know, it's also done, though, to help out the pitchers on these teams, right? Because if you go 16, 17 innings, then your rotation is screwed up, and then all of a sudden you need to call somebody up from high A, low A. So it cuts down on travel. I do not like this at all, but I understand why they're doing it. And again, if it's minor league baseball, is all about the fans. And when we go to that first extra inning game at Riverwalk, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Well, okay, so then let me ask this, because I always look at it in this essence of, I feel like every decision to change Major League Baseball, as a fan, you're looking at it as, what happens if this happens in the bottom of the ninth of Game 7 of the World Series? Like, I feel like that's how we're looking at every single thing that will ever change baseball is, what happens if Astros and Dodgers are tied after 9, and then, look, Jose Altuve got out in the top of the ninth inning. He's at second base now, and that could be the World Series game-winning run.
Well, there was also some chatter just in the same vein a couple weeks ago about, I don't know who was talking about it, but all of the, you know, the Colin Cowards, the Rich Eisens, whatever, because I think there was some discussion at the Major League office about the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth of baseball games, where baseball is the only sport where your best players aren't necessarily guaranteed to have a chance to tie the game, win the game, whatever. And so there was that talk of, oh, maybe you should choose who your three batters are in the bottom of the ninth. I understand that, but if we're going to compare baseball to every single sport, then we're in trouble, because then we're going to start giving home runs. You know, you get three runs for a home run now.
Yes.
That's why
I love it. Baseball is the only game without a clock, too.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest component is, you know, an NHL game, you're not going to be sitting there for 6.5 hours watching an NHL game.
No.
Something has gone terribly wrong if that happens.
It has went into 4 to 5 overtimes, and you're in a playoff game. That's all
then,
it is.
Yeah. I mean, again, regular season, they still have ties. So, again, that's what makes baseball special to me. And to Chris's previous point about, you know, protecting the pitchers, that's still the only reason that I don't like this rule. That means we don't get Jake DePue pitching anymore. We don't get the position players
Mac
coming
James,
out.
I know.
I mean, it's still possible. It still could be, you know, that runner on second base doesn't score. You know, we're just assuming that this is going to automatically make sure that it's a 10-run or a 10-inning game, but in reality, both teams could score one run. It could be one of those games where it's a 2-2 tie in the ninth, and then it ends up being a 6-7 final score in the 13th. You know, it's baseball. Anything can happen. So it'll be interesting to see.
Then how do you score? Like, because
shout out to David Nestle, our stringer. Good luck figuring this one out, bud.
Yeah, because if, again, every single inning they're going to start that way, but it's always going to be an unearned run. So do we still give the RBIs? Do we still, you see what I'm saying?
Like, oh, yeah, because if you have a guy who has 16 walk-off singles or something, but they were all in extra innings, shouldn't that guy get an asterisk, maybe?
Guy
was on second for all of these hits.
Yes.
Automatically on second.
Yeah. One of the comments I read was the runner on second should be called not a ghost runner, but the commissioner runner.
I like that. Rob Manfred, shout out.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where all these questions are going to come in. Now, it is good that they're going to do this in minor league baseball because, again, you know, nobody does want to stay at a ballpark till 12 and 1 a.m. because a runner can't score. And then you are using – I get that part.
Yeah.
But, again, looking at it from the major league aspect,
that's a different ballgame.
That's way different. Like, you're looking at something totally different with that. And that one's now about winning. That's not about the fans.
45 years later, people still argue about the designated hitter.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's just going to be one of those things that if it does make it to the major league level, I think there's going to be a really big backlash. Yeah. Again, this was minor league. Minor league baseball Twitter doesn't get, like, tons of replies. It was just get on there and look at how many replies they were getting.
Well,
you brought me into your office, Scott. You're like, check this out. Awful, terrible. Why did they do this?
It was more of just refresh and then 20 more comments.
Right.
Refresh and 20 more.
Well, look. I mean, there was a point in time last year during the regular season that we had fans calling into the fallout saying, If the National League had a designated hitter and Lane Adams could play in every single game for the Atlanta Braves, the Braves would be a playoff team right now. And I'm going, Are we really arguing the designated hitter rule like right now because the Braves have one good hitter?
Right.
Like, come on.
It's America's pastime. And again, that's what's so great about baseball is that you can take a guy like Cap Anson from 1900-whatever
yeah.
and compare him to Derek Jeter in 2011. Yeah. So, I mean, that to me, I'm a nerd. That's why I love baseball is the stats and just the situational stuff and the strategy. So will this affect it? Yeah. But again, from a minor league perspective, I hope it will end up being good. We're still going to have, you know, we've got our diehard fans that are going to, you know, complain and make sure that it's known that this is not a rule they support, and we're happy to pass those notes on. But it's also like we didn't really have a choice in this. So,
well, then my next question is going to be, can you guys sponsor the runner? Like, can we now have
like a Halloween store or something? Yeah, Ghost Man on second?
Yeah.
Party City?
We'll see. Yeah. See, we're just thinking about
Party
all
City,
things.
Call me.
All right, now when we come back, we're going to be joined by a guy that will eventually be this voice that you hear all the time. Matter of fact, he is, if you ever actually watch MLB Network, you hear him all the time towards the end of the night, and that is the voice of the LA Dodgers, Joe Davis. We'll be joined by him when we come back on Sports Radio 740. Welcome back in, Sports Radio 740, the Biscuits Radio Show with Joe Hunt, Chris Adams-Wall, Scott Tribble. Obviously, you can always follow all of us on Twitter. Biscuits Baseball is the one that you need to go to, which, by the way, you guys yesterday were tweeting out about some questions that people can ask. We'll get to those later on as well. You can follow Chris at Chris Adams-Wall, at Biscuits GM for Scott, and at Joe Hunt myself. But we are joined by a former voice of actually, it was our sister station, News Radio 1440, as well as the former voice of the Montgomery Biscuits, Joe Davis, who is now the voice of the LA Dodgers. And I don't feel like I have the ability to truly ask you the first question, so I'm just going to let Chris go ahead and start with this.
Yeah.
Since you followed him up, right?
I didn't. Well, there was a guy named Aaron Vargas who was between us, but Aaron was Joe's number two for a season, and then Aaron took over. And Joe, what you been up to for the last 6 years? Did you do anything after the Biscuits?
I guess I decided to get my life in gear today, and I'm at the zoo with my dog. So
that's a zoo in Arizona, yeah?
Yeah, right. We got an off day here in Phoenix, so we're checking out the ostriches. That didn't sound right. Maybe ostri.
Ostri,
yeah. Ostri.
So we're looking at the ostri, and now we're looking at the giraffes.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that I'm living a pretty well-rounded life.
I think so. And we know that you were here between 2010 and 2012. You saw a lot of great players. You saw Chris Archer, Matt Moore. What were some of your favorite moments about being the voice of the Biscuits and during your time in Montgomery?
You know, one that always stands out to me is not a moment from a Biscuit, but a moment in a Biscuits game against a guy that everybody's heard of now. At this time, he was Mike Stanton. But Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run over the scoreboard at Riverwalk Stadium, which
that's right.
You guys know is some kind of mammoth shot. I mean, it went just to the left of the cursive B that's on top of it, and then he got called up to the majors the next day. So it was always cool to see guys like that. And, you know, you mentioned Matt Moore, saw him throw a no-hitter against a lineup that had A.J. Pollock leading off and Paul Goldschmidt hitting third. So to see that happen live and know that it was, you know, these big-time prospects that were in all the top 30 lists, it was cool and gratifying then, but it's even, as time goes on, it's even a more special thing in retrospect, just looking back and seeing what these guys have become and realizing what we were watching at that time without really knowing it.
Yeah, you got kind of put into an interesting scenario, you know, now being at the major league level. I mean, you know, we follow you on Twitter, and it's fun to be able to hear you talk about Matt Moore with the Giants taking a no-hitter into the eighth and being able to recall, oh, by the way, I called him throwing a no-hitter back in 2011. So, I mean, even with the Dodgers organization, there's so many former Rays, even from the front office with Andrew Friedman, but, you know, there's a lot of Rays in the NL West, so being able to talk about the guys that you talked to and called back when your time here on the Biscuits has got to be fun.
Yeah, and a couple, like you mentioned, Andrew Friedman, he and I have become good friends. We actually used his babysitter last night. And he was a guy who, 2010, when I was 22 years old, my first year on the job in Montgomery, I remember, like, quivering, asking him to come into the booth and sit down for a half inning with me, and now he's the guy who I'm stealing his babysitter. So, you know, somebody like that, Adam Liberatore, is probably going to make our bullpen. He was in Montgomery when I was there. And across the division, there's a bunch, as you mentioned, Scott, you know, in Arizona, a lot of those guys are homegrown guys that we saw come up through Mobile. I think that's probably the best example of a bunch of guys that you know, we saw in Montgomery during my few years there.
You're now with the L.A. Dodgers, and we know how they did last year, Joe. They made it all the way to the World Series, and I had to tell a couple of the broadcasters in the Southern League who will remain nameless that you were probably not going to be calling the games on the radio, despite what they said. Oh, no, they'll put Joe on there. I go, I don't think so. I think it's just the TV voice. Plus, you had some FS1 work to do calling that Astros-Red Sox series. But was that kind of tough for you to watch your team go to the World Series and not be behind the mic for that run?
Yeah, it totally was. It was an odd sensation. Justin Turner's walk-off home run in the NLCS.
Yes.
Game two. It was a really weird thing where my wife and I were watching the game from a suite and having a good time, you know, trying to put it in perspective, like, look, we're at a World Series game, you know, at an NLCS game. This is awesome. Even though I wanted to be calling it, it was really awesome, sitting there having a beer and just being a normal guy. And he hits the ball, and right off of the bat, you can tell it's gone. And I put my hands up in the air, like, oh, this is great. And as the ball's flying out, I'm like, oh, no. I'm sitting here in a suite drinking a beer. Like, no. There were a lot of moments like that where it was like, gosh, you know, it's almost like raising a child. And then when you get to the more gratifying moments, watching a stepdad get to raise a child.
Yeah, know? That doesn't sound great
not
at
that,
all.
Not that Charlie Steiner is the stepdad. Charlie's incredible. But regardless of who it is sitting in the radio chair, it's just part of life as a TV guy. You know, you're there for the regular season, and then you're not once the postseason rolls around. It's part of the territory. So it sucks, but I get it. It's part of the job as a TV guy.
Well, Joe, 2 years ago, I got to go out to Dodger Stadium. In fact, I know specifically the night because it was Kobe's last game at the Staples Center. And so everybody was all hyped up about that. But as the basketball game's getting going, we're sitting right behind home plate, and the guys in front of me start looking up to the booth. And they and Vince Scully's just leaning over and waving, and like everybody's just in awe. And I know that you replaced him. You were the guy that got on the mic for the very first time after him doing Dodger games. Look, being in radio and Chris Adams Wall doing what he does on Sports Radio 740 is going to be great, but it's nothing like having to follow up Vince Scully. How was that? I mean, what were the nerves like that first night when you got on the mic for the first time as the voice of the Dodgers?
Yeah, the first day, and it helped, Joe, that there was a bit of a transition in 2016 where I was doing just road games. Yeah. And Vin was doing all the home games to kind of ease me into the whole thing, I guess. So that was helpful. Then opening day last year would be the first, I guess, my first real game at Dodger Stadium, and the first one where I was kind of the guy and Vin had officially retired. And they did a ceremony pregame where to introduce the ceremonial first pitches, they had Vin record a voiceover thing that played over the stadium where he basically introduced me and handed the microphone off to me and said, you know, for the players and the managers and the exciting day, it's the first day of the season, but I also want you to join me in welcoming a broadcaster who's celebrating his first game at Dodger Stadium. And I got a standing ovation from 50,000 people as I took the mic from Vin, kind of ceremony, you know, like in a ceremony, but also symbolically in that moment, and then introduced Tommy Lasorda and Wally Moon for their ceremonial first pitches. But just that moment right there, and in the moments between that and the actual first pitch of the game, that was a really emotional thing to kind of look around and see the 50-some thousand people surrounding, and just kind of a pinch-me moment. I've been lucky to do a lot of cool stuff nationally. That was a moment where I really looked at it and felt like I had made it, just looking around and you know, thinking of the hard work that I'd put in to get to that point.
Yeah, Joe, talk about that. I mean, when the Biscuits hired you, you know, you were coming in as the youngest broadcaster in Double A baseball. I mean, you're right out of college. You're moving from Michigan down to Montgomery, Alabama. You know, you have a beautiful girlfriend making the trip with you. But, you know, talk about that moment of getting the job with the Biscuits and then looking ahead to the moment you just described. Like, I mean, could you ever imagine that scenario taking place?
No, I mean, I stepped out of an English class to take the approach that I had gotten the job. And I wanted to say, could I just spun it to be sure that I was still in school when I applied as I could? So, you know, you probably didn't know that he was pulling a guy out of senior year English class to offer him the job. But that was, you know, it was no less of a pinch me moment at the time. You know, at the time I felt like that's when I had made it and got to do my first games in Montgomery. And going into it, you know, you mentioned my then girlfriend and now wife and stroller pusher and navigator with a Zoom app next to me here. She moved down to Montgomery with me, and you know, it was things where she knew that it was a really hard industry to climb the ladder in, and that it very well could take a long time for, you know, for me to get that next job. And I've always been somebody who's really goal oriented, but try to be, while being aggressive and always looking at what could be next, trying to be realistic too. And our thing was that we together wanted to make it to the major leagues or get a big time TV contract by the time I was 30. And I felt that was a pretty attainable thing. But not going to be an easy thing. There are a lot of really good minor league broadcasters who just for whatever reason don't get that opportunity. So much of it is timing and luck. And, you know, I mentioned it being a pinch me moment and a moment where I felt like I had arrived on opening day last year. But there were several of those moments throughout the journey. And I never want to lose perspective of how lucky I am at each step, and have always tried to embrace each step as the biggest.
And Joe, you're only 30 years old. Do you have any advice out there for young broadcasters?
I think it is kind of along those lines, Chris, where it's, you know, you always want to do justice in the job that you're currently in. But I was always looking at what was next, while balancing that with being great at, or trying to be great at what I was doing every single day, wherever I was. So always looking ahead at what's next, trying to anticipate the next move and setting yourself up for that move, but trying to use every game as an opportunity to get better. And then I think it's really important to be hard on yourself, listen to yourself a lot, get other people's opinions, take little things here and there from guys that you like, and become an expert on the industry. You know, when you're looking ahead at what's next, I think it's important to study how people get jobs and why they get the jobs and when those jobs come open and who's doing the hiring for the jobs and why they like what they like and don't what they don't. And, you know, just controlling all those little things that you can, because it is such a difficult industry, as you well know, Chris. And Scott, you've been through hiring processes and know how many people there are that want those jobs. So you've got to do everything you can. Anything you can control, you've got to control the heck out of it. You've got to control it better than anybody else is going to, because you can't give the hiring people any reason whatsoever to say no. Because when there's 100 resumes on your resume on your desk, Scott, you're looking for any little reason to throw one of them out and whittle that down. So I know that's a lot of advice, but those would be a few things that pop right.
All salient
mind.
Points,
good,
though.
It's good advice.
Yeah. So, Joe, we appreciate you coming on. You know, we want to let you get back to go pet some lemurs or whatever.
Reptile
you're doing
house.
Out there.
Reptile house.
There
yeah,
you go.
We're at the Great Fox right now. He's himself.
Last question I've got for you. Who's the better rapper, you or Oral Hershiser?
It's me for sure. I think compared to what you would expect, maybe him. But I've definitely got more swag than Oral at this stage, let's be honest.
That's all you need.
Okay, now I need to know what song. Now, what song are we talking about when we say you're a better rapper?
You just need to follow Joe on Twitter.
By Eminem.
Yeah.
There we go.
There's been some world famous Twitter videos and Snapchats going out of the two having rap battles. But again, Joe, we appreciate you coming on. We're happy for all can be that you're found great success and you and Libby are happy out there in Los Angeles. You know, don't forget about us, little Montgomery Biscuits down here on your rise to the top, but you're always
Never.
Welcome here whenever you got an off day in Atlanta and want to swing over. We'd love to have you back.
Thanks so much, Scott. It's great to talk to you guys.
All right. Take care, Joe.
Bye, Joe.
All right, guys.
See you, Joe. That was Joe Davis from the LA Dodgers here on the Biscuits radio show. Again, I try to be all proper and stuff. You guys are like, yeah, hey, we're just talking to Joe. And I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, we just talked to Joe Davis. Like, that's just how I am because, again, I remember.
The guy I went to have burgers with, you know, two or three times a week, you know, yeah. during when he was here. So he's just he's part of the staff. That's one of the great things about being in the baseball industry for 15 years like I have. You get to see all these great players go on to be great stars like Matt Moore and Chris Archer, guys that yep. you can you know, walk across the street and see them having a beer at the Alley Bar.
Yep.
But, again, staff go on to do great things. You know, I have a lot of people that have gone on to be GMs in minor league baseball or work for the, you know, Northern Pelicans or Atlanta Falcons, whatever it may be. So
yeah.
it's fun. It's just relationships, and Joe's one of the easiest people to have a great relationship with and one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet.
So, Chris, what about those shoes you're trying to fill right now?
Yeah, pretty easy. I actually worked with Joe 3 or 4 years ago when he was calling college football games for Fox Sports. So
yeah,
that's how I know Joe. Yeah. Exactly. No, but Joe, Aaron Vargas was the number one. He needed a number two. I told Joe I was interested in getting back into broadcasting, which is what I did in college. He hooked me up with Aaron, and here I am talking to you fine gentlemen.
Hey, that's
and
exactly.
Joe.
And me, yes, and Joe. And if, dude, I don't know which Joe you're talking to, but yeah, that Joe. When we come back, we're going to continue our preview of the Southern League as we're going to continue that next on the Biscuits Radio Show right here on Sports Radio 740. Always remember to go and follow the Biscuits on Twitter, at Biscuits Baseball. Make sure you go and you like them on Facebook as well as you continue to get updates on everything from the Capital City Classic. You have opening day, Human Cannonball Guy.
Yeah.
I always call him that.
The Bullet Smith.
That's right. Human Cannonball. He's going to be shot out of a cannon into the infield again. So you can make sure that you can be there for that. Obviously, Max Fireworks, all that stuff. You get updates on it as you follow the Biscuits on Twitter as well as on Facebook. But you need to know about the teams that are actually coming into the River Region. Like, we love talking about the Biscuits, but there are other teams that also have some great players that are going in. Today, we're going to focus on two of those. And Chris and I are
going to
be great.
We're going to Jackson. We're going to mess around.
So, do we just start there? Do you want to start in Jackson?
So we're going to start with the Jackson Generals.
Scott can sit there and look at us like a parent.
Tennessee, one of our favorite cities in the Southern League. It's about midway between Memphis and Nashville if you've never been there. And the stadium's right on the highway, so if you're driving in between those two cities, you will definitely see that stadium.
Yes.
Last year, the Jackson Generals went 71-69, which was the fifth best record in the Southern League. Biscuits did not have any problems with them last year, though. They went 15-5 in 20 games. This was the team that had the Biscuits number all of 2016, though. They came in here famously in August of 2016. They swept the Biscuits, and they actually held them to 30 consecutive scoreless innings, which was that was a tough pill to swallow. And obviously, Biscuits met them in the playoffs that year, and Jackson went on to win 3-1, and then the Southern League. This year, we'll see. Last year, they had some good players. They had the 2017 Southern League MVP, Kevin Crone, whose brother CJ now plays for the Rays.
Yes.
So he will likely be in AAA, although they were saying that last year, and he wound up spending all of it in AA. So
yeah.
You never know, and he was in AA through most, if not all, of 2016 as well. But my guess is he'll be at AAA Reno. Taylor Clark, one of their prized right arms, a starter who was with Jackson last year, will probably be in AAA Reno as well. This is a team that even had Emilio Bonifacio on the team last year.
Not a rehab.
He was just on the team. This year, the guy that I would pay attention to, or look out for, rather, is the number one prospect in both Baseball America and MLB Pipeline, and that's this right-handed guy named John, I'm going to butcher it, Duplantier. I don't think he's French. He pitched at Rice, though. He's a 23-year-old fireballer. Led the minors last year. Led all of minor league baseball with a 1.39 ERA across two levels. That's low A, Kane County, and high A, Visalia. He pitched at Rice, and he's projected to start this year at Double A Jackson. So, the first time that Jackson comes to Montgomery is May 29th, and he could very well be the Generals' ace, so that's someone to look out for. They have a left-handed swinging first baseman named Pavin Smith, who's supposed to succeed Paul Goldschmidt when and if he decides to test free agency. That could be the Diamondbacks' next first baseman. And then they have a right-hander named Taylor Widener as well. He's the number four prospect for the Diamondbacks. Another funny thing to look out for is their manager, Shelly Duncan. Some of you will remember his, month or two of just jacking home runs all over the place for the Yankees. He's Jackson's manager. They have another guy named Domingo Leyba, who actually was injured last season against the Biscuits, only played in 23 games last year. He's a very good second baseman, shortstop. And then Anthony Greer of Auburn. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Pay attention to him because he might be coming through Double-A Jackson as well. I think they're going to be they'll be pretty solid, I think. They are usually a tough test for the Biscuits, and obviously going all the way up there now without an off day, I think, is going to be a challenge because you got to drive, 5 hours?
Yes.
And then go to the hotel, then go to the stadium, and then play 9 innings or perhaps extra innings with this new rule, which should be fun.
Well, and let me ask, because I know that you mentioned the Jackson Generals. They changed major league teams.
They did.
Yes.
There were some musical chairs going on.
Yes.
Yeah. So the Arkansas Travelers, who play in the Texas League, were once with the Los Angeles Angels. Then the Angels moved to Mobile in our league, the Southern League. Mobile used to be with Arizona, but Arizona went to Jackson.
Yes.
And that's who they're affiliated with now. And then Jackson was affiliated with the Mariners, and the Mariners went to Arkansas. So if you follow all that, Angels went from Arkansas to Mobile, Diamondbacks went from Mobile to Jackson, Mariners went from Jackson to Arkansas.
Well, and the reason why I say that is because there had to be a season or two where there were players that were in Mobile at one point in time, then they went to Jackson.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. In fact, most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were the Mobile Bay Bears incognito, as I called them last year, because we only saw them play for the Bay Bears, then they switched affiliates. That's a tough park to play in, though. Yeah. It's not very... not very player friendly. I remember one time we showed up to the stadium. It was a gorgeous day, and all of a sudden, Brandon Liebhaber, the broadcaster, came in and goes, "Yeah, the game's been canceled." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Look at third base." And there was just a giant shovel in the ground, and apparently they had forgotten to put the tarp on, and it had rained the night before, and there was just no way we could play. So the game was postponed, and we played a doubleheader the next day, which was great.
Well, that's the reason why I remember, is because I remember hearing about that and going, "Wait a second, well, Jackson used to be Mobile, and then they started doing that exact thing you just went." I was like, wow, okay.
It's also, I believe, 420 to dead center, and it's got a 15-foot high wall. The only player that's ever hit one over there, I think, is Tyler O'Neill, who no longer plays in the Mariners organization. Kevin Crone may have done it once as well.
I am excited to see Anthony Greer come through, though.
Yes.
He's an Auburn guy. He's a diehard Auburn fan. I mean, obviously, he went to school there, but he's a passionate guy and really supports him on social media. So it'd be fun if he's up here whenever Jackson comes through. Definitely got to come show your love.
And he's played at Riverwalk before in the Max Capital City Classic, which is not this Tuesday, but the one after that.
That is correct.
March 27th.
That's it. And how do you get tickets? See, look at this. I mean, we're just
boom. I love it.
BiscuitsBaseball.com.
But also, we go to the team that just recently changed their name. People, I always remembered them as the Jacksonville Sun.
Yeah.
And I remember going in, and when I was in Birmingham, them pulling up to the gym that I was working out at, and they all came in. They're all wearing their Marlins gear and all that. The name has changed. The team is fantastic, but they're now the Jumbo Shrimp.
Right.
And that's one of the, hands down, outside the Biscuits, one of the best names throughout all of minor league baseball. It was so crazy that last year we actually got their PR director on Sports Radio 740 because so many people were asking, why did y'all change y'all's name to the Jumbo Shrimp? I said, well, fine, I'm going to get the answer for you. And that, but that's the other team that we're previewing today.
Yeah, so we go 700-plus miles down the road. I think one time in 2015, the schedule for the Biscuits had them going from Jackson all the way to Jacksonville, and I remember Aaron Vargas saying, whoever made that schedule, I am going to need to have a talk with.
It was surprising his last season.
I don't know
what happened. It was weird.
Yeah, anyway, Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, formerly the Jacksonville Suns. They play right next to, I'm blanking on the name of the stadium, but wherever the Jaguars play.
Yes.
Everbank Field.
Everbank
Stadium. Jacksonville, the Biscuits did well against them last year. They went 8-2 in 10 games. Jacksonville finished with a 69-71 record overall, which was the sixth best record in the league. Finished last in the first half South Division, but then they finished first in the second half South, made the playoffs. They were swept by the Pensacola Blue Wahoos in 3 games in the first round, but that was the only round. So Pensacola became co-champions, and Jacksonville technically the co-runners-up with the Biscuits. But gone this year will be Southern League batting title winner Braxton Lee, who began last season with the Biscuits, then got ejected in an afternoon game, and on that same day got traded to the Miami Marlins.
I remember that.
And then went right to the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. But 2 weeks later, he was in town playing us.
I was at the game, and I saw him get ejected, and I went, oh, crap, I've got to get back and do the show. And by the time I got back, they're like, did you hear about Braxton? I was like, I know he got thrown out. No, he just got traded.
Because
he got thrown out? Seriously?
That was my reaction when Wes, our camera guy, told me that. I go, oh, he just got ejected. What's the big deal? But no, he was traded. And on the last day of the season, won the Southern League title by a few decimal points over Jonathan Rodriguez, who ended the Biscuit season with that walk-off two-run home run. He will likely be at AAA New Orleans and might even get some time in the big leagues with Miami this season, because we all know that their roster has been completely gutted, and you and I could probably play for that team.
Yeah, exactly.
And Scott.
You want to?
No.
What position you want to play?
Can I just be the video guy?
Yeah,
okay.
That's cool.
Okay.
It's a nice stadium. Apparently, they're getting rid of that sculpture, though, out there in center field, which Jeter loathes. Anyway, John Norwood, also a guy who played well last year. He'll probably be in AAA. A lot of their prospects, their number one guys, Lewis Brinson, who came to the Marlins in the Christian Yelich trade, he's probably not going to be in Double A. He will be in trips or up in the major league
level. He'll probably be starting in left field.
Right, I would think so, because, you know, you think about that, Ichiro's not there, and that's the least of their problems. Marcelo Zuna, Christian Yelich, Gordon, all these guys
are
gone.
All those all-stars.
And Mike. Giancarlo Stanton, right, exactly. No longer there as well. So Luis Brinson, a guy who'll probably get up there. A guy who will likely start with Jacksonville, I would think, would be Monte Harrison, who also came over in that Christian Yelich trade. He's a big-time outfielder, the number two prospect in the Marlins organization. And they're managed by Randy Reddy, who's, I think, Scott Tribble's favorite manager in all of minor league
baseball. This guy is incredible. He is, like, the nicest, most friendly manager you'll ever meet. Like, he came up to our office and just introduced himself. Like, not in the visiting clubhouse. He just came up to our front office, like, hey, are you Scott? Hey, I'm Randy. I just want to say nice to meet you. And I was like, you're my new best friend, man. So, yeah, we texted. You know, I make sure his wife got parking passes. It was just, I love Randy Reddy.
How about that?
So excited for Randy Reddy to come
Randy
back
Reddy. And the Biscuits will be going to Jacksonville twice this season. That's a long trip. It's about 5.5 hours, but always good to get down to a major city. It's actually the largest city in America. Did you know that? But in terms of area, it's
the largest city in America. The only thing
I
learned over the offseason is the Duvall thing. That's the only thing that I've learned about Jacksonville. That's it. Do you guys know?
Yeah, the Duvall thing. Yeah, the chant, right?
They chant Duvall, and they're like, why do you chant Duvall? Because Duvall is the county that Jacksonville is in, but is the exact same size as Jacksonville. So not only are they Jacksonville, Florida, they're Jacksonville, Duval, Florida, and Duval, the county is made up of only Jacksonville. That's the only thing I've learned about them.
Roger Hoover, their broadcaster, whenever I would text him about how well the Jaguars were playing, he would just text back, Duval, and I didn't respond because I didn't get it. And then I finally got, you know what, after the third or fourth time, I go, I got to Google this, and so I figured it out. They had a nice run last year.
Yeah, decent run.
Unbelievable.
Decent, yeah.
Bringing back Blake Bortles, but expect the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp to be a good team, because we know the Miami Marlins farm system is stacked.
Yes.
Though. It is. I mean, I don't think the Major League team is going to be very good, but they have a lot of players down there. And, again, long trip for the Biscuits. We have to go there twice. They only have to come here once.
All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap up the Biscuits radio show, get you ready for some more basketball as well as Auburn baseball, as we were just talking about Anthony Greer just a few seconds ago. We come back on Sports Radio 740. Final segment of the Biscuits radio show today, as coming up a little bit later on in your afternoon, we're going to have more college basketball for you, the NCAA tournament. Yes, I had Arizona in the Final Four. That's all I'm going to say. But as we're going on, I'm going to let you know.
Nobody cares.
People in this office care, because we had a bracket pool. So that's why we all care. Okay.
Moving on.
The reason I said all of that was just to say that normally, or what we were supposed to be doing, is going into our NCAA basketball coverage, but because the first game that's being featured on Westwood One is the Alabama basketball game, we are not allowed to air it. It's going to be aired over on our sister station, Fox 95.1, where you can hear Chris Stewart and Brian Passing. That's the only reason I was saying it all. I haven't been on the air for 3 days. Just leave me alone.
Just start a Duval chant.
Yeah, Duval. That's exactly.
First round of the tournament. You know, you just count the number of times you hear my bracket. Like, nobody cares.
No.
It's like talking about your fantasy football team.
Yeah.
See?
Now, hey, speaking of fantasy sports.
Fantasy.
Hey.
Nobody cares.
If you are one of the people who care about fantasy baseball, you know, one of the fun things to always do is try to pick that, like, rookie who's coming up and, you know, get him in one of the last rounds. rounds. You know, Jake Ferreira was kind of a sleeper last year, and you know, one of the things we thought would be fun to like Joe Davis even mentioned, his favorite memory of Biscuits wasn't even a Biscuits player. It was when Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run over our scoreboard, which is probably my favorite memory too. But you know, there's a lot of guys who are going to be making their MLB debuts this year that are kind of suddenly graduates, as we call them. You know, guys who have been here in the past year that haven't really made their major league debut, one of which I know Joe's very interested in.
I am very interested in one player. And I am very interested. Now, again, it's going to be 2.5 weeks before I get to see him. But yeah. I'm talking about who we have now discovered will be the second most famous Ronald ever. And that's Ronald Acuna. Because, again, nobody else is named Ronald in this world. That they always shorten it.
I'd say Reagan and McDonald are the two front runners.
McDonald's already starting to get phased out because he's creepy. Yeah. So that's the reason why we've said Ronald Acuna is going to be, which I don't know. I say Acuna and I say Acuna. I don't know which one it is.
I think it's Acuna.
Is it Acuna? Yeah. That's the one I'm interested in. Now, if you're going to, he's probably going to be picked up, I'd say probably middle of the way into your draft, but the only reason is he's getting picked up to be stored on the bench for when he does come
up. Yeah, he's got Aaron Judge power. I mean, he was in the home run derby down in Pensacola and put on a pretty good show, but I mean, just the sound that his bat makes, although it hasn't been heard since Stanton first came up. So it's going to be exciting for Braves this year once he gets caught up. He's not going to be their opening day, but probably maybe a month in.
Yeah.
But he could still put up 30, 35 homers in 5 months.
It was crazy. At some point in time last week, some Braves beat writers were tweeting out how he started 0-for-7 to start spring training, and since then's batting over 500.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like he's only batted like 15 times since then. Like, he's getting great reps. He's playing every single day, and he's batting over 100, and he's mashing the baseball.
And he's a determined young guy. I mean, he said, I am here to make the Braves roster. I mean, in his mind, I think he's already in Cooperstown, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, you want a guy like that. He's got kind of the Brent Honeywell syndrome thing going on.
But the weird thing for him is, where does he go? Like, what is his position? Because the Braves are going to have to make some moves just to free up space.
That's why the National League needs a designated hitter.
That's 100%. If they had a designated hitter.
We'll take your calls now.
Yes, there we go. Then we just need to throw out the phone number right now. But no, you have him. But you also have other Southern League guys that are going to be coming up that you can get possibly on the waiver wire after the draft is over with that you'll want to store. It's all about storing the right players on your bench.
Yeah, I mean, the Rays have a lot of guys coming up. Again, a lot of people are looking to take Brent Honeywell. Probably not a good idea this year unless you have a keeper league. But again, Willy Adames, Jake Bowers, both guys you can expect to be up there. The Reds actually have a lot of former Pensacola guys that are making the way up. Tyler Molly, Jesse Winker, Nick Senzel, all looking to get a lot of playing time with the Reds this year. And of course, as Chris alluded to earlier, Tyler O'Neill, after being traded for a bag of peanuts to the Cardinals.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry DePoto.
Yeah. could be roaming the outfield to Bush. So it'll be a fun year. Last year, there were so many great rookies with Judge and Bellinger and Hoskins in Philadelphia. I think that trend's going to continue this year, and rookies are going to steal the show again.
But then you have the flamethrower. The flamethrower that was pitching for Birmingham last year.
And Mr. Kopech.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he's had a good spring, I think. You know who hasn't had a good spring, though, is Jake Ferreira. And I just wanted to mention real quick, the Rays did announce that their first four starters against the Red Sox.
Yeah.
It's going to be Chris Archer, Blake Snell. Then they're going to do that bullpen day for the third game. And then they're going to have Nathan Eovaldi go the fourth game. And then Jake Ferreira is actually going to open up the Yankees home opener in the Bronx, but he has not pitched well this spring. But I think Jake will get it together.
They're trying some new pitches with him. They're trying to get his breaking ball stuff a little bit more controlled. I mean, Jake's always been a flamethrower, so I think once he gets into regular season, not worrying about development, he'll be fine.
Well, let's be honest, though. How many times, I mean, think about spring training is basically practice. It doesn't matter. You're just going up against live batters every day to get used to it, and you're going to try out new things. I mean, you do it so that when the 162 starts, you're good to go.
Unless you're Chris Bryant, you're saying, call me up, and it's 20 homers in spring training or whatever it was.
And that's pretty close to what Acuna is doing right now, too.
If spring training doesn't matter, why don't they put a guy on second base to begin every inning?
You know what? Might as well do it. Or just, you know, have half your squad go one place.
And
half
the switchboard is lighting up, but we are out of time.
All right, we're going to send you over now to the tournament today from Westwood One as they start previewing today's basketball games. We'll get the game started after the Auburn baseball game, which first pitch is going to be at 2 o'clock today. And we'll be back on next Saturday to talk about many things, including the fact that we're already going to preview MLB The Show because I'm pumped for it. Just going to let you know right now. I'm already pumped.
1 week from today, already have the show.
I know. I'm excited. All right. We'll be back with you next Saturday on Sports Radio 740.